This month on Over the Fence, we talk about E3 and Windows 8. Valve is working on a Linux client? Some say Mass Effect might be the most important sci-fi of our generation. All this and more on this month's incredibly belated Over the Fence. Welcome to Over the Fence. I forgot the rest of the line.
Wait, we have people and they're here to say things.
Yes. Hold on. Okay. A podcast for
adventuring gamers.
Blah, blah, blah. Okay. This is the podcast about things and stuff, usually relating to gaming and sometimes other things.
And by other things,
Dalton,
they mean whenever I talk about stupid
David,
shit.
Whatever and names we're using now.
All glory to the Gaben.
All glory to the Gaben.
Yes.
A new religion has started.
Oh, you're yes. Kidding? I've been following that one for a couple of years now.
And with me are Patrick.
Yo.
Eric.
Hello.
And Jonathan.
Hiya. What's up?
So, guys, we've been on a multi-month hiatus. Fun times.
It's all Eric's fault.
Hiatus?
Yeah, I kind of moved again, so.
Yeah, me too.
Well, my fault.
Yeah. So, E3,
mm-hmm.
Let's narrow it down to, like, the thing that you took away from it. So, Patrick, what did you take away from E3?
Watch Dogs. Definitely was.
So you really found that interesting?
Oh yeah, I like the concept. I like the graphics look good. The gameplay looks good. They seem, as far as I can tell, took everything that worked in Assassin's Creed and then made it smart. Which,
you know, there's a rumor based on the graphics of that demo that game is entirely next gen and will be like a launch title on the next consoles.
Which is funny because I can tell just from having played like the Assassin's Creed series that like there are definitely aspects of just like the way the characters move that I can tell it's like absolutely a derivative of the Assassin's Creed engine.
Yeah,
but it looks so much better. You know,
Ubisoft has kind of won some ports for me over the years with actually making what I consider feasible and passable PC ports like Assassin's Creed.
Mm-hmm.
I never played the Assassin's Creed 1, which is kind of screwed up even on the Xbox.
The PC port for Assassin's Creed 1 is really bad. Crashes.
It's awful.
Does not agree with alt tabbing. The jump from Creed 1 to Creed 2 was amazing in terms of their PC ports.
Yeah. And also Creed 1, like it takes like 5 minutes of like dedicated effort to get out of the game once
that
you decide.
Too, yeah.
I hate that.
So the one thing I wanted to say there though is like I just bought Ghost Recon Future Soldier lately, mm-hmm. and I want to shoot myself in the head. It's so terrible.
I'm so sorry.
Like I even had like bring the quality settings down, which you know is like really hurting my feelings. And the game like near the end, like the frame rate is just dropping to unreasonably low frame rates. It's got to be sub 20. It's really hard to play. And they keep doing like, you know, you got to be strategic. Don't be caught. And like, all right, go get him. Everybody run. I'm like, what the hell? How is that strategic? Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know. I think I get more enjoyment of that kind of gameplay out of Splinter Cell. So, but in any case, I'm worried that any kind of future PC releases from Ubisoft might be a little glitchy, so I'm going to hold off on any releases. Like Assassin's Creed 3, I'm not going to get right away because of this experience. But on the flip side, Assassin's Creed Revelations looks the best and runs the best of all the ones I've seen on the PC.
Really?
Yeah. They don't do that culling thing. I'm sure you've noticed it when you're running down the street, like how like the buildings kind of come into focus as they're closer to you, and you have that little line running down the walls as the buildings are being unculled. You know, as the sweet spot of rendering that's like a 50-foot radius of circle around you. That doesn't seem to be present at all in Revelations, to my.
Oh, that's nice.
Speaking of Assassin's Creed, what do we think of from what we've seen of Assassin's Creed 3 so far?
I hope I can skip the ship stuff, or at least not have to do it a lot.
I know, right? Like, they acted like it was some huge thing. Look, we're going to show you. And it was just, like, really boring, and, like, I didn't really care.
Did you guys see how good the Pirates of the Caribbean games did not go over?
Exactly.
What? They made Pirates of the Caribbean games?
Exactly.
They did.
All right, so my takeaway from E3, the thing that really has me, like, you know, wet my shorts, is Far Cry 3. Oh, my God. It looks like a first-person Uncharted, and I'm all over that.
Far Cry 3, I really, really wanted to like. Like, they talked up a big game, they said everything, but when they started, at least during the Sony demo, when they sat down and they started actually playing it, it looked like El Generic Shooter number 3700 that was coming out this year.
What I like about it is they add things that I think new shooters should have. Like you have the free-running stuff is kind of there. Mm-hmm. You have variable gameplay, which is one of the things that I didn't like. Far Cry 2 kind of opened it wide open, but so wide open that it was hard to play.
Yeah.
So I wanted something kind of between Far Cry 1 and Far Cry 2, and this looks like what it's nailing. It's like that you don't have to take a beeline straight to your goal. There's cool stuff like diving off of cliffs, and it's cool music and variable weapons and things level up. So it sounds like it's going to be, to me, what Assassin's Creed was, where you kind of have this fun level up process that kind of seems to work in synergy with just the normal flow of gameplay. That might be a tall order, but that's what I see from the demos.
Not to mention something that's very rare for me, which is that I gotta say that story looks incredibly intriguing.
The story looks good, but the gameplay and the graphics really looked fishy to me. If they can actually live up to what they were selling, it's going to be great. But
did you hear
the cautiously optimistic page for this?
Did you hear that they're demoing most games at this E3 on PCs, not on consoles?
Yeah,
that's another thing that's really
and strange. Using Xbox controllers. Yeah, that's hilarious.
And also, on another side note, I read a story lately that PC gaming has gone up like 230%.
does not really surprise me.
So, but this just might be like the calm before the storm of the next consoles, so I think people will kind of start flocking back to the consoles because they love the Game Pass for everything, which, you know.
And that kind of leads into my takeaway from E3 was the biggest feel I got out of it was treading water. Every developer, every console, they are all just waiting for next year. And the only developer who really had some way to stand above the competition was Nintendo, and they had nothing to show, nothing really solid.
Do you think, like, remember when we got the first announcement for BioShock Infinite?
Mm-hmm.
It was like a year and a half ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, they really want to just hype us up for a really long time to get us ready. And then and then we're at the year and a half mark, and it's still not out, and it's still maybe a year away.
And it got pushed back, I believe, to next February.
Because my friend was complaining that this E3 didn't announce a lot of new stuff, and E3 was always like, you know, a bunch of new stuff you'd never heard of before. And I'm wondering, is this a necessary result of the kind of cost that goes into gaming that you have to actually get an early announcement and just keep spinning the hype for as long as you can so that, you know, when it comes out, like, nobody can think of anything else?
I'm going to say yes, and I've got another example that backs that up. Last year at Nintendo's E3 conference when they announced Wii U, one of their big announcements was a new Smash Brothers title that would be on both the Nintendo 3DS and the Wii U.
Yeah.
As of last report, that title didn't even have a developer.
Yeah.
So it's, again, something that was announced years ahead of time before it's actually going to be able to come out.
Yeah.
And it's really... I'm really kind of afraid for gaming. I mean AAA gaming in a way, because what you're seeing is you are seeing the big publishers, basically being Ubisoft, Activision, and EA, barely taking chances on new franchises. Now, Ubisoft, to their credit, has two big ones coming out, being The Last of Us and Watch Dogs. But at the same time,
The Last of Us is Naughty Dog.
Oh, I'm sorry, Naughty Dog. But you're not seeing people taking chances with new ideas. You're seeing rehashes, you're seeing the same
sequels.
Old gameplay tweaked,
yeah.
And you're seeing more sequels than I think I've ever seen at an E3. The
I
only
think that's
innovation
because they want to they want to take their
indie.
Yeah, well, they want to take their existing audience and move forward. There's a related storyline I just read on Kotaku today. I didn't read the whole thing, but there's this console company that wants to make gaming free. They want to upend all of console gaming, and I didn't read this full thrust of what the article was, but the whole idea that, you know, you're pretty soon that they think that dedicated gaming consoles, dedicated PCs are going to get their lunch handed them by like portable gaming devices, like mm-hmm. you know, iPads, iPhones, and what have you. I'm not sure that the margin is that close.
I don't think it's quite that close, but
there's a slightly bigger market for handhelds, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, I think the two are kind of unrelated, yes.
Yeah, I don't think there's really any crossover, and so the threat of one pushing out the other is not really that great. But I could definitely see the handheld market, particularly with smartphones, and really getting big since everyone has one, and it's a great platform for casual gaming.
It's interesting, though, because, I mean, I expected, well, you know, maybe Microsoft and Sony are not really going to have that much, but Nintendo, you know, they've got a console. They've got a brand new console. Nobody else can. They've got a, and it was just terrible. And
I don't believe there were any new games announced for Nintendo's console that wasn't either previously announced, and I count Zombie U as previously announced because of the Ubisoft presser, or the only new thing they announced was Nintendo World, which is really looking like it's going to be a console pack-in in the way that Wii Sports was. That these are mini games that are fun, but they're going to teach you how to use your new system.
All the press I got from around the E3, there was no positive spin on Nintendo.
No,
everyone was just said it was metastic. It was just nothing amazing.
It's like
E3 came down to Sony because they actually debuted two new franchises, being Last of Us and Shoot. The one at the very beginning of the conference, where by the creators of Heavy Rain, that looked pretty amazing.
Oh, that's psychic one. I can't remember the name either.
Yeah, the psychic ghost one. Or Ubisoft, who has basically attacked with Watch Dogs and then made us all turn off the conference and read the highlights later when Tobascus showed up.
Yeah, which is amazing because I like Tobascus. But
I liked the Ubisoft conference among the better of the two. I liked Sony pretty good. Microsoft was Microsoft.
Terrible as usual. Ladies and gentlemen, Usher.
Nintendo, I have no interest in Nintendo on any front, so I didn't even bother watching it. I didn't watch EA because I didn't want to hear about their sports games, because I don't really care about that.
I can sum up EA's press conference by the way their opening words were, and that is the first thing that came out of their mouth was, "We love DLC." That was all you needed to know about EA right there.
On that note, I want to talk briefly about my DLC experience with Battlefield 3, mainly because I want to say something good. I loaded the map. I think it's called the Gulf of Oman, which is some pseudo Middle East place. And I was running around the town going, you know, like, most of these buildings are destructible, and there's a lot of features here, and I would just wet my pants to see a mirror's edge with a map of this scale. Because I think the map is probably about at least 2 kilometers in like scaled size long, which I think is pretty huge.
Again, kind of going off my earlier point with how consoles are, or the big publishers are only releasing games that they are absolutely sure they'll have a major market for. Mm-hmm. My hopes and dreams of seeing both Mirror's Edge 2 and Beyond Good and Evil 2 have more or less completely vanished.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah, I gave up on BG&E a long time ago.
I'll keep the Porsche light on for them, but at the same time, I'm not pulling out the China.
And that's part of the reason why I'm really happy with Watch Dogs, because you see them taking, like, clearly this looks like it's an incredibly expensive game, so they're taking a big risk with something that's a brand new IP, you know?
And I respect that.
And
it keeps certain things, like the shooter aspect, but it's not a run-and-gun shooter constantly, you know, rails. And I kind of like that. That's one of the things I wish more of the shooters that I play would do, where, like, it isn't just, you know, one action scenario to the next, to the next, to the next. Like, I want some kind of, like, variety. I want to be able to, like, sneak up on these guys and actually, maybe I don't have to kill everybody, or maybe I don't have to kill anybody at all, you know? Not that I don't want to shoot people, but it's just, you know, I want to have the choice. You know, just like that Uncharted 3 where they're like, oh, I better sneak through here. It's not fucking possible to sneak through that area.
Yeah.
There's no way in hell. There's nothing you can do. It won't happen. But I want to take us a little spin here. Since we say PC gaming went up 230%, let's stab some stakes into the heart of the PC gaming, Windows 8. So let's talk about Metro UI just a little bit.
No, let's not.
I hate it. I don't think anybody I've shown Metroid thinks a lot of it. Eric, you're kind of on the fence saying, well, it might be good for tablets. Problem is, it's going on everything.
Yeah.
It's going on the server OS. It's going on the server OS.
What? That bugs me in so many ways.
No.
Metro UI, as the idea is that they wanted to get rid of the start menu and make it this pop-up touchscreen interface. Basically, this touchscreen interface. And the idea is great if this is only for a tablet version of Windows 8. The problem is this is going to be on your desktop, your laptop, your tablet, your server, which is wrong in 30 different ways.
And also, like, the start menu kind of is in the side and pops up when you need it. And they're saying, well, most people don't use it. I'm like, well, that's because you have, like, broken it over the years. I mean, the dual-tier start menu, I got on board with that. That was cool. But the thing that way back in, like, Office 2000, Windows 2000 days, mm-hmm. when you installed Office, you didn't get a folder with subfolders. You got the icons to the damn Office programs right there in the programs menu.
Yes.
So since that time, I've been gradually, like, whenever I install a program, I drag out the icon that launches the program, delete the fucking folder.
Mm-hmm.
And then my programs menu was usable. But now I've gone to the point where I also pin things to the start menu, so I have everything in the start menu that I need, and I pin the stuff that I use constantly in the taskbar. So, like, I have the choice to customize the way I want. Windows 8 has none of that. I mean, you can rearrange it, but you really can't do anything else to it. And I don't – the whole
and it's
hit
clunky.
The start button. Hit the start button and have the whole screen turn into that start screen. I'm like, how is that helpful? And further, like, right now, just during this call, let me count. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 windows open on my screen, and this is kind of minimal for me.
Mm-hmm.
7 windows that you could not possibly see all at the same time running Metro UI. Even if you had 2 displays, you're forced to have Metro UI only on one, so you have the regular windows on the other. But getting rid of arrow, so you can't customize the taskbar/window surrounding, so it's going to be the lame light blue color that it has on, like, Vista Basic back in the day.
Which is really disappointing.
So, like, there's just, like, there's the bullet points go on and on and on why it's terrible. But on the flip side, I mean, the only good thing I can say about this OS, it boots like nothing. Like, 10 seconds, it's up. Everything is really snappy because this is being designed so it's lean enough to actually be put on a smartphone.
Mm. And admittedly, they did a lot of good things, and I've been reading a lot of good things with their boot times and with their overhaul of the underlying systems. But just these UI changes, like, you can have a really, really good guitar, but if the thing looks like shit, do you think somebody's actually going to pick up and play it if it looks like it's duct taped together? It's the same concept. You've got, like, a terrible, terrible UI that nobody's flocking to, that nobody knows how to use. Sure, you've got a great underneath core system, and
I think
maybe other people in programming might like it, but what's the point of
Bulma's baby?
I think that's the big issue.
Developers.
What's the point in having a system that runs smoothly if no one can use it?
That's my point.
And the worst part about the whole thing, the thing that really nails the final nail in the coffin for this one, is it's not discoverable. Mm-hmm. Like, I've shown you guys pictures of the screenshots of, like, what my tablet looks, because, like, you can look at the screen and say, okay, these icons all tell me what I need. These are the programs. This is the home button. This mm-hmm. is the multitasking button. And if you don't know what it is, you can tap it because you see that it's there. Meanwhile, Windows 8, when you're in the Metro UI, you have to kind of swipe in from all four corners to bring stuff in. It's harder with the mouse because it doesn't make as much sense. And mm-hmm. just I fumbled with it for a couple of days. I didn't leave it on for 20 minutes and remove it immediately, although I was very strongly wanting to. But I can't. This is the first time that there's just nothing I can do to this operating system to make it work for me in any shape or form.
That was actually one of the things that bugged me the most, was gestures plus mouse.
Yeah.
Who thought that was a good idea?
I don't like the mouse idea. I don't like the trackpad idea, like using a trackpad with a tower. Just no. In no way is that good. This, all of Windows 8 makes perfect sense if the goal is we wanted to build a fully functional operating system for use on a tablet. And it works amazingly there. The problem is, then he said, okay, now let's make it work on everything else.
Well, their theory is that, and I'm sure you've noticed, I mean, they had it on the phone, the Metro UI, which they've mm-hmm. changed just lately to make it actually look a lot more like Windows 8, but the 7 is changed.
But again,
there will be, the, actually, that's another
Windows 7. It works on that UI.
the Windows Phone 7 cannot be upgraded. None of the hardware that's running Phone 7 will ever be able to go to 8. 8 has to be hardware specifically built for it. There's that. But then they put it on the Xbox, and I still don't... I mean, I can kind of get around in it, but I still don't find it to be... It's not user-friendly. It's hard to find stuff. I feel like I'm digging through more menus than I ever did before. I don't see how this is an improvement on any level.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't use the Xbox as, like, statistic because it's an already installed base.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had the option to not go to the MetroUI update, I would have. But they don't give you that option. If you don't do it, they cut you off from the Xbox Live and you can't connect any of the services.
It's not intuitive. It's not fluid. It's horrible.
But they're not taking the market by storm on the phones. I mean, they have some of the cleverest... I mean, if you look at the Samsung...
Although I'm kind of glad at this point that they're not.
But if you look at the Samsung Focus, it's a really clever phone. Like, the design is very slick. It's got a nice shell. It has a dedicated camera button. So, like, you hit this button and camera's on. Like, you don't... Even the phone's locked, you can, you know, get right to the camera, which to me, I think, is mm-hmm. a very big deal. You know, some stuff that's clever, but it's like those are like little gems in a pool of just terrible bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't understand. Like, you're not taking the market by storm with the phones. What makes you think the computers are going to go there? I really think this is going to be a Vista Part 2 squared or cubed. It's going to be incredibly worse than what Vista flopped. Especially because there's going to be people who want to do productivity things that just aren't going to go there.
The really sad thing I see out of this is traditionally, whenever Windows was lousy, Mac would start getting really good again and would release a really good version of their operating system. The little bit I've seen out of Mountain Lion isn't convincing me that Mac is going to be pulling that off this time.
No, they fell off the rails with Lion.
They really did. And it's just, I don't know. I'm really unsure about a lot. And I know I'm playing the pessimist really hard this cast, but... There's so many things in technology.
I don't know. Is it just us getting old?
I
don't think it's us getting old.
Innovation
isn't around. I think
I'm 22. Am I old?
Yes.
Is that old now?
Yes.
Yeah.
I just turned 25. I turned 24 a couple weeks ago. So yes, you're old.
By the way, Dalkin, happy belated first birthday of no significance. And it's okay because I just had that birthday too.
Okay. I get that. It just took me a sec. So,
high five, Patrick.
So, on a related note, Gabe Newell of Valve has seen...
All glory to the Gaben.
Indeed. So he's seen Windows 8, and...
He doesn't like it. He doesn't know where Microsoft is going, and so they are now investing in cultivating a Linux client of Steam. And so I don't think it's just the Steam part. I think what they're also going to be cultivating is the ability for, like, source-powered games to run on it.
Yeah.
It's exactly like
what they did when they were able to port Steam to Mac. They're setting up for that move.
But here's the problem. Like, the most popular enthusiast Linux that I know of is Ubuntu. Have you used it lately?
No, but I've heard good things about it.
The whole, like... Linux is all about choice. No, they're locking you down. Like, they've got this little dock thing, and it's on the left side of the screen.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I like that at the bottom, where I'm kind of used to icons always being, nope, you can't put it there. What? Why? Seriously? And, like, so, like, the version before the version I tried in my virtual machine, you could. There was a workaround to get it to go to the bottom. But the one I had was locked to the left.
Oh, that sucks.
And I was like, that's one of those things that, like, you know, what if I want on the right? What if I want on the top? I'm like, that should not be locked down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the point of Linux. It's never been the point of Linux. And that's, I understand why they're going that route. I just don't think it has legs, at least not yet. Unless they're going to come out with a Valve version of Linux. Which
well, that's the nice thing about Ubuntu, is if they fuck something up, they just go back in the next version.
Huh.
So...
Well, hopefully. I look forward to that potential. Bert, who I've talked to, says that's pretty cool. But that doesn't mean that suddenly all the games on Steam work on Linux.
No. It'll
like when Steam went to Mac, you know, only certain games were able to do that. A lot of the indie stuff seems to be pretty easy for the developers to recompile. But, you know, PC-specific / console-specific optimizations don't always, you know, go right over to Linux. And people say, oh, a lot of things... You know, run in Wine. I'm like, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, if my whole library doesn't work in Wine, means I have to do too much work.
Yeah, if my whole library doesn't immediately work in Wine, I don't want to hear about it. You know,
mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But it's it'll be interesting to see where that goes. I'll be paying attention to it, but I'm not looking forward to it. And I really hope that Microsoft comes to their senses and gives us an honest-to-God desktop OS back in Windows so that we don't have to worry about this.
Yeah, please, God.
So, on a lighter note, do we think that Mass Effect is the most important sci-fi fiction of our generation?
I know it's one of my favorites.
It wasn't.
I don't know if I can say the most important of our generation, but it's definitely up there.
Yeah.
I can think of two others that are pretty prominent. Snow Crash. I forget the guy's name. Is Neil Stephenson in that?
Mm-hmm.
And I just read Demon and then Freedom, which if you haven't read those books and you have any technical savvy, you will love them. I don't not want to go too long in this, but Demon, it's about an AI that kind of takes over everything.
Mm.
And with the goal of, like, putting the world back on track.
Mm.
But the methods employed by some of the operatives are a bit extreme, up to and including killing the entire task force of like, the FBI, NSA that are trying to, like, stop it. You know, killing them brutally. And then people who, like, you know, amass way too much money and try to use it to, you know, do nefarious things. Suddenly they find themselves without a head, you know, things like that.
Fun.
But the first book, you're actually, like, spending it afraid of, like, what's happening.
Huh.
The second book, it takes so many twists by the end. You just like, there was a moment I closed the book and I was like, oh my God, I just got to go for a walk. I got to think about this because like one of those things that gets under your skin and you just got to stew over it for a little while. So
I'll have to check this out.
I think those are both really important franchises. Like Snow Crash was a hard book for me to read because I didn't find it very interesting. It had a lot of good concepts, like the idea of the, I think they call it the metaverse, which is essentially a 3D virtual reality internet simulation. And so everything is kind of turned into 3D things. So, like, if you go to the store, you actually travel to the 3D store and what have you. I always thought that the internet was probably going to head that way. But so this book kind of follows on what I thought was going to happen. But the story that wraps around it is kind of, I don't know, not as interesting in my opinion. So Mass Effect, by comparison, I think Mass Effect is very, very obviously BioWare's Knights of the Old Republic, if they didn't have to make a Star Wars franchise game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think Mass Effect, it had a lot going for it. Like, I think it successfully took elements from, like, basically almost all prior sci-fi, big popular sci-fi universes, and then sort of make it better and make it more mature and make it, I guess, more believable, not necessarily realistic, but, like, believable in a sense that you could get lost in it, I guess.
Of course,
the problem was that with not necessarily just the ending itself, but the clusterfuck surrounding the ending, I almost feel like the whole sort of Mass Effect series has just sort of become a little bit sour for me.
I really think in public opinion, like, Mass Effect 2, people are riding it hard. Mass Effect 3, it completely fell off the radar after it came out because of the controversy and everything.
Right, yeah.
But whether or not it ends up in the annals of great sci-fi epics, you have to admit that it did a lot of things right. It took the action and, like, the magic powers of Star Wars. It took the varied aliens from Star Trek. It took the grittiness from Firefly. It took the military from Stargate. It put them all together into one great idea, a very solid storyline, and let you just have fun with it. And
there was a commentator that gave us a negative review of Mass Effect 3. Not to say it was bad, but what he said the reason he thinks that Mass Effect 2 is better than 3 is because Mass Effect 2 has sort of an episodic feel to it.
It really does.
Each mission, each quest, whatever, kind of has, like, its own little, you know, like, this is on this episode of Mass Effect 2, you know? And so you feel like you can digest it in bite-sized pieces, whereas Mass Effect 3, everything's kind of interlaced, and you feel like you can never put it down for 6 hours or something. And sometimes after you're playing it, you're like, okay, I'm actually kind of tired now. Because you don't know when to stop, because you can't stop because you want to keep it all clear in your head, so you do all the quests, because damn it, if you skip one, in certain cases, if you skip a quest in the middle of a mission, that's it. You'll never be able to go back to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mind that so much, but yeah, I can see how it would cause difficulties for people. And I really think that, you know, even despite the whole controversy, which I think was way people freaked out over it way more than anyone should have, but
yeah.
But there it is. I think it was a great game as a whole, but at the same time, you know, they recently released the extended cut for the ending and everything.
Don't tell me anything. I haven't played it.
Yeah, I won't go into details on it, but I will say that for the most part, it did satisfy the issues I personally had with the ending.
Yeah, it gave the more exposition that you would expect, but it didn't really change anything. So
but,
it was the fact that they had to. That's it.
Yeah, and the thing is that they had to do that in the first place. I think, John, yeah. you mentioned this before. You know, it was the principle of the fact that they had to basically make up for that lack of exposition in the first place.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So that's not to say it isn't a great game. It's just not as great as I think it otherwise would have been.
I think what happened was they took the great part and they turned it into multiplayer. And that's where
possibly.
It went. Or the efforts that would have produced the great
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. See, I got to agree with Dalkin here. I had my concerns about the ending, but I think everybody was freaking out about different things. And it just sort of got confused into one giant clusterfuck.
Yeah.
My issue was the fact that there were just gaping plot holes all over the place. Not necessarily that it was, like, finger quotes, sad. Some people were just angry that it was sad. And then other people were angry that there were plot holes. And other people were angry for other reasons. So it all just sort of came together and just, you know.
We kind of hoped that the ending would tie it up in a nice bow. Because the other two games did the same thing. At the end, the ending just felt complete and whole and happy. And you kind of expect the third one to do the same. But I still had that nagging feeling while I'm playing. I'm like, I'm not having as much fun playing this as I was expecting. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain, like... Here's my perspective, you know, to use other games to qualify. Like, when Borderlands came out with the first expansion, or first DLC, it was zombies. I fucking hate zombies. I don't ever want to play a game with zombies. Except I love Borderlands so much, I will play it because I just wanted more Borderlands.
Yeah.
And when it came to Mass Effect 2, I loved so much that all the DLC, I'll pay for it, I'll play it. And that's awesome. And even though I don't... in theory, like DLC, because I don't like, you know, that they're piecemealing me the game, because they're just using it a way to, like, rake you over the coals to give you the whole game they should have given you in the first place. But again, I was just itching for more so much that I'll pay for it. And with Mass Effect 3, I don't care what else they come out with. I have no interest. And that's the point. It doesn't give me the itch that the other...
I never had that problem with Mass Effect 3. In fact, I can't get enough of the multiplayer. But
which finds I think, approach really shocks me because you have campaigned to the contrary that particular approach to gaming before.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that a lot of games with Mass Effect 3, they actually had a separate team working on the multiplayer from what was working on the single-player campaign. And they had the resources to do that, whereas a lot of games that do that, they have to basically split resources from the main team in order to do that, which then makes the game suffer as a whole. And I don't really feel like that happens so much with Mass Effect 3. Maybe a bit with the ending, I don't know.
I don't feel it's suffered as a whole, but I do feel like there's a certain amount of polish that they would have had if they... put more people on, or give them more time. One of the two. Mass Effect 3 had a shorter development cycle than 2, didn't it? It seemed like it was coming out really quickly after 2, in my opinion.
Let's see. It came out a year after 2.
It was a little bit more than a year.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it was like a year and a few months.
Mass Effect 1 had a, or Mass Effect 2 had a 2 or 3 year lead.
Yeah.
So anyway,
they put a lot of polish into that with the when it came to like the game and the engine, because on PC it was spectacularly smooth.
Oh, it was.
And
gorgeous.
I think between that and the fact that at that point the Mass Effect franchise had just so much hype to it that people did have their expectations set really high, and between that, the shorter development cycle, and you know the not exactly you know Hollywood ending. I think that was what resulted in the kind of explosion of nerd rage.
Nerd rage!
Yeah. So,
No, I don't think it's bad. I was just disappointed.
But yeah, that was my reaction too, was I was just a bit disappointed, mostly because, like Patrick said, there was several plot holes, and there was just was not as much exposition as I would have liked. And as I mentioned, the extended cut did resolve pretty much all of that. But I think I would have preferred them to have just gone with a longer production cycle and just get it done right the first time around.
Yeah. Do you, moving away from the Mass Effect, do we have any other topics of, like, any recent news stories that has piqued your interest lately? Anything particularly poignant that you...
I'll bring up one quick. This week, Steam announced that they are going to be releasing their, or last week, Steam announced that they are releasing their Source Movie Maker for free. And as of tonight, it is going out to the beta version is going out to people's Steam Tools tab. So if you're interested in doing filmmaking within the engine, yeah, check there and you can download it for free.
Kick assery.
Cool, cool. I would like, of course, to bring up, like, very quickly, because I know we have some fans here, that The Legend of Korra finished its last episode a few weeks ago. And what did those of us who are fans, which is most of us...
First off, I think I got it early.
Oh, you didn't?
I think I got the episode early because...
When
I was expecting one episode, I got two, and then I looked on the store, and they didn't have the last episode that they had allowed me to download automatically.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, oh, I don't think I should talk about the ending, because I think I just saw it, nobody else did. So, that was pretty awesome. I think for the time, they really put a lot of bang for your buck into that show.
I'm just
really
surprised
great.
With what they... You got to remember that this is a show, and this, I'm saying this for posterity more, but this is a show that aired on Nickelodeon Saturday mornings at about 10 a.m. The crap that they got away with in the last episode for
we have an explicit
Saturday,
tag. You can say shit.
Yeah, okay. The shit they got away with included a murder-suicide and another attempted suicide. And
spoilers.
Spoilers. But, yeah, let's just say that this show was a little bit on the dark side, and it was my jaw hit the floor the entire last episode when I saw. Wait, did Nickelodeon just pull that? Nickelodeon just pulled that.
I feel like it's sort of like Harry Potter; it's trying to grow up with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know the thing that bothers me is, you know, because I've been on Reddit and you know other sites recently, and it's just getting so much shit from people, and I'm like, why? It was amazing. So you didn't like the
shipping
ending,
board.
But give it the show. Give the show credit. It was good. Like, come on.
There's you've a certain. You also got to remember that I'm one of the Tumblr fags, so I've been seeing this play out my dash on a daily basis. But the relationship and the sheer fangirlism over this show has been insane, and a lot of it comes from the crazy fangirls. So
I'm sorry, I was with Bora the whole way. I thought that was a nicer couple. That's just me, you know.
Well, in another case, the stuff that I've read about it has been like, well, it didn't deliver on, you know, the kind of promise or potential it had. I'm like, so
that's really just the idiots at Gawker. The idiots at Gawker hate just about everything they see that's popular.
So yeah,
like, you've got to remember that.
But I'm so like, well, what is the whole thing? So you think that it could have been one thing, and so it didn't live up to what you imagined it would be?
So
basically,
like,
that's what
the
they were saying.
The problem was like the article on like Kotaku or something, because it was on Kotaku for some fucking reason, even though it wasn't a...
Well, Kotaku is really slipping hard.
Yeah,
I'm really not liking them as much lately.
So, you know, basically they titled... I don't have the article in front of me, so I'm paraphrasing, but it was titled something like, 5 Reasons Legend of Korra Sucked. And it's like, no, because then you go read the article, and it very clearly says, like, we liked this show, but here's some things that... Then don't say 5 reasons it sucked, because then you have people who, like, you know, read that and then get that idea that, oh, this was a terrible show, I guess.
Well, the problem is not only that, but it wasn't just one article. He did it twice. There was 2 articles about it. So, like, suddenly you think, like, with the general theme or the general tone is that it's a bad game or a bad show.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem. It's giving off this message to other people that, like, this is a bad show and it's going to, like, decrease, you know, potential people that would have been interested just because they're looking for, like, you know, what is the word?
A sensationalist headline.
Yeah, it's a sensationalist headline because that's not what they're saying at all. They're saying, we love the show, but here's some criticism we have. They're not, you know, it's
I think the Sound of Stuff generally, for those of us who saw it, would you all recommend it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's the easiest way to say it is it was a 12-episode series. It's a very quick watch, and it will suck you in, and it wraps everything up. And we'll see what they do with season two. But in and of itself, it's very well done.
See, I'm amazed that they were able to fit all that in 12 episodes. Mm-hmm.
See, I think that you're overestimating that they wrapped it up. You know,
I'm sure there's some plot threads that we may not even realize are still there. They're really good with
they
that.
They said, like, well, everyone got their bending back. Like, I only saw one person get their bending back. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that that's
admittedly, it's the one person who deserved to get her bending back. But again, spoilers.
But then, what if the problem becomes, you know, maybe she could give bending to people who didn't have it in the first place.
Yeah,
dun, dun, dun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know? we don't know.
So suddenly I can see, like, potential for scandals in the second season. So I look forward to that.
My thing, I have a few issues with the way the ending. I think all the stuff that happened post-climax basically could have been drawn out over its own 20-minute episode, I think. Like, where she has to find herself. You know, I think that could have, you know.
Only one problem with the whole series is that it wasn't 23 episodes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Maybe.
Yeah.
Except, you know, admittedly, the old Avatar show had some filler. And so,
when the old Avatar show had filler, a lot of times, especially in the first season, that filler was pretty bad.
Yeah,
it got better in the later first season.
Every time they had filler, like, I remember the second book and the third book, but like, when there was a filler episode, I'm like, this is filler, and I don't care because it's amazing. You know?
Mm-hmm. it gets better, but at the same time, just
like the Ember Island setting. Players. The Ember Island players.
Well, that is media's best representation of a filler episode. That's,
right before the finale, they had this, like, but I was in stitches the whole time. It was fucking amazing. That episode is great.
Yeah, I did laugh out loud quite a bit to that show. So, David, any recent news or media that's drawn your attention?
Nothing you guys would be interested in. It's all ponies.
Oh, really?
Oh, seriously. I'm glad that you're not spamming us with ponies anymore. I saw the movie John Carter.
Mm.
And let's not say it's Shakespeare, but I really enjoyed it. And I was shocked how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Because I think the problem is that the trailer just doesn't do it justice.
Well, how do you sell that movie, really? How? You don't...
It's a tough movie to sell.
They make it look like he's already on Mars, and so, like, there's, like, the trailer doesn't actually show that he is not from Mars, and that there is, like, a story on Earth, and there's, like, some intrigue, and there's a lot of little details. And so far, I'm in the first book right at this point, and so far, the movie and the books are very much separate. They're very different. So far, I haven't found the city to be walking. I don't know where that's going to go or how that's going to end up, or if it's just they extrapolated some things. Like the description in the book of the flying vehicles, it can sound essentially like rockets that, like, you just strap your legs around like a motorcycle. No wings at all. And then in the movie, they look kind of like weirdly adapted insectoid shapes with wings. So I don't know. That doesn't bother me. It never does, because I understand in order to take a book to a movie, there has to be some sacrifices.
Yeah.
In some cases, you know, the book was written, you know, a long time ago, and so we have certain misunderstandings of the science applied there that we now understand. And so some things are extrapolated. So I didn't really mind it.
Yeah,
So, yeah, I liked the John Carter movie. I was surprised how much I enjoyed it. I mean, since I have Netflix and I continue to have videos coming and going, you know, I can't stomach, like Mr. Something's Penguins. I couldn't sit through it.
Why would you watch that?
I couldn't. I started and I just no interest. Couldn't.
You know, I mentioned this on a Reddit thread, not to depart too much from what we're talking about, but I mentioned this on Reddit because I remember I read that book as a kid, and when I heard they were making a movie, I was like, okay, why? And then I saw that it was like a movie with, you know, Jim Carrey, and it's like, you know, in 2010 New York. And I'm like, what? Like, the whole point of that book, even like as a kid, is that there's this sort of, I say, there are some feathered birds at my side. Well, what will we do? You know, because it's sort of in this World War II period.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what made it funny, is because this guy is like, well, I say, there are penguins here. You know, then it's sort of like, because it's that sort of old-school English mentality of, like, there's penguins? Well, no problem. Let's just find a way of dealing with it. You know, yeah. As opposed to Americans who are like, oh, my God, you know, and it doesn't work as American
comedy. Well, I think it deserves less exposition.
Patrick, I think you need to do that again.
I think that it deserves less exposition than giving it the way I do.
I mean, oh, my God.
I got that new Conan movie, and it sounded promising in the beginning because Morgan Freeman was narrating. And I think that they probably blew the entire movie's budget on the narration because nothing else stood up to that. And I'm watching it, and the guy who's acting as Conan, like, somebody told me that his persona is more like what Conan's really like from his stories. I'm like, whatever. But this is not a good movie. And I made it halfway through. I'm like, okay, I've got to turn it off. I want to punch it now. I'm starting to hate this movie. And so I went back and I ripped my DVD of Conan the Barbarian, the old one with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And, you know, obviously his linguistic skills being limited, but being a barbarian, mm-hmm. that's not a problem. That movie, despite the slight special effects not really holding up to today's standards, is still a much more watchable film than, like, this new one. So take that how you will. Just like I think, like, that movie from 81, Excalibur, I think that's probably the best Arthurian telling you'll ever see. And if you need any more proof, Jean-Luc Picard's in it, and what's her name? Yes.
How dare you?
What's her name? I can't think of it. The girl from Red. God. Now I have to find it. Helen Mirren. That's what it is.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, right. She's in it. I don't know the other actors, but like I said, if you have the opportunity to watch Excalibur, it might even be on streaming on Netflix, watch it. It's the best Arthurian telling I've ever seen. So, so the random topic, I didn't have one picked out, I didn't have time to really stew on it, so we were going to talk about Reddit, so I guess we can do that.
I have no idea about Reddit, so you guys go crazy.
I used to love Dig. Because Dig was kind of like a news aggregator that just randomly pulled in all of the funny, good stuff on the web that everyone was talking about. So I didn't have to do anything. It just kind of pulled it all in. And there is a certain... And Reddit, once you kind of customize it, will do the same thing for you, but it depends. Eric is very religious, and so there's a lot of atheist stuff on there. So if you don't filter it properly, you're going to have a lot of stuff you're going to find upsetting. You know, so he
filters
out...
If you don't filter your posts, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, he filters out the atheism and adds in the Christianity. That's the only reason I logged into it. Like, I don't really want to partake of the social. Like, I think I've responded to, like, two posts. But I have things like, you know, autos and world news and what have you, things that appeal to me. And
well, the thing is, I've heard that, like, that's a particularly hostile community, though, the r/atheism. Because, like, you know, I have friends that, you know, are atheists and still think that's bullshit. That entire subreddit is just full of, like, just assholes, you know?
I think it's
true, really.
I think that push come to shove, if you see extremists on either side, you're going to find, you know, unpleasant stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, like, that goes for anything, really.
I mean, there was a post that somebody quoted for somebody's Facebook, and I'm like, why are people so stupid to, like, put... You know, the scandalous stuff on Facebook that people are going to make a screenshot, which means it's going to live forever. But people keep doing it. Like, well, I guess they don't have Reddit to remind them of, you know how your stupidity will be remembered forever. You know, so then in a case, she said essentially she hates Satan worshippers and draws a very interesting correlation between science learning being not important because it was brought to us by man, not God, and because of that, they don't regret getting a bad grade in their science class. So what they're essentially doing is justifying that they're ignorant. And so, you know, like I said, you get colorful responses on both sides of the fence. It's not like, you know, it's one way or the other. But the thing about Reddit is you can pick what you're interested in. And I have not tried to actually plumb the depths of Reddit to find out exactly what all that would be, because there's only so many hours in the day. So I just, like, when I think, hey, I wonder if there's a Reddit about this, I go looking for it, and you'll find all the subreddits, and you see which one's more popular, and you subscribe, and now that's part of your front page. Reddit used to use the tagline, I think, you know, the front page of the internet, and it's probably the site I go to the most.
Mm-hmm.
And so I quite enjoy it. And what happens, like, when you add all your categories, like in my case, you know, pics, funny, politics, gaming, videos, awe, technology, science, this is the list across my top. If you want to, like, focus, like, right now I just want to, like, read about cars. So I hit autos, and then I click on that one, and then all of the page is just the stuff from the auto subscription. You know, and there's a certain amount of internet democracy, so, like, when you go into the comments are voted up or down, so only the ones that people are really enjoying are near the top. Usually they're pun threads, which actually I find very entertaining. But I like Reddit quite a bit. I can't. I miss Dig. When Dig went away and I tried Reddit, Reddit was not good at that point. I mean, I don't know if you ever used Dig. Dig was good until they decided to revamp it. Reddit at that time was not ready for prime time, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I use Reddit. I'm linked to it on occasion, but that's it.
Yeah, I think you haven't warmed up to it enough. But there's once you start, like, customizing it, like, I'm sure there's pony stuff on there. Once you start doing that, it'll start feeding you in the best way, and then
there's pony stuff on 4chan either. That doesn't mean I want to go there.
Well, to be fair, 4chan isn't particularly all bad.
It's really just B, the problem. The problem board.
I'm not
seen some of the MLP 4chan, threads on 4chan. 4chan actually has an MLP section now. It's all bad, but that doesn't mean I want to go there.
I remember there was so much shit that went down because of people posting pony stuff on CO that they had to make a separate board.
The thing is that before they actually made the separate board, the pony stuff got completely banned from 4chan.
Yeah, exactly.
And then that led to the creation of multiple sites, including Equestria Daily, PonyChan, PonyBuru, and a few others. And about a year or more later, that was when they finally added the MLP section to 4chan.
They also cross-pollinate. You'll get 4chan posts and Reddit posts on 4chan.
Oh, yeah. But it's always, I always hate it because my problem with the way that happens is some idiot is always like, 4chan's opinion of this, and I'm like, you fucking idiot. It's a person posted this to 4chan. It's not representative of all of 4chan, you fucking asshole.
I think that's intentional, and
but people keep doing that, and I'm just like, fuck you.
Well, it's like the people who say, you know, I literally exploded. Like, no, you figuratively exploded, because if you literally exploded, you'd be dead.
Hey guys, I literally exploded.
You know, so, like, what's that somebody did a video where he's talking about, like, the language that people use. And actually, this does bother me, too, when people say, I could care less. I'm like, that's not the phrase. It's couldn't care less.
Could care less is meaningless.
Yeah, so, but people keep saying that. But I'm like, but to me, that's...
I could care less. You know, I could care more, but I could care less.
So it doesn't have the impact of couldn't care less does. And the thing is that I love when people try to spend time talking down to other people or talking down about the way that someone else spoke, and then they do it with, like, bad grammar or misspellings. You know, and I don't know what's propagating this. It's bothered me since the first time I saw it when Chad wrote N-O, meaning K-N-O-W. I was like, how the fuck do you not know that difference?
Mm.
You know, and that's, and, like, his language is filled with stuff like that. But then it drives me nuts. It wasn't like it's him. I see it everywhere. I'm like, how are people not learning this? So it drives me crazy.
My problem is, like, sometimes I'll have friends that just make, like, spelling errors up the wazoo, and you get to the point where I feel, and I'm not an asshole in, like, normally with this, but when it happens, I feel the need to correct them, like, for their benefit. You know, like, so that they know not to make, because it's, sometimes it's just aggravating. And I don't do that usually, but there are some people, man, that I'm like, you should know better. Let me correct you on this one.
See, I try to pick my battles on that front. I have fairly good linguistic and speaking skills, and well-graded in college, even the advanced composition. And the most complained about problem of college graduates these days is they don't have good vocal or linguistic or written communication skills. And, well, but then I work with people who have degrees who, you know, are terrible, terrible, terrible writers, and it's unbelievable sometimes how much stuff we have to fix.
This stuff drives me nuts, and I try to refrain from correcting people because a lot of people take serious offense to being corrected grammatically or with their spelling.
Yeah.
And even though, you know, I don't do it to be rude, but, you know, if you're older than, like, 14, you know, if you're in high school or older, you should know how to properly punctuate and capitalize a sentence. And you should know the difference between homophones, at the very least.
Well, I have a niece who I've been getting on for not text messaging in a way I can understand. And I said, you know, and I'm not, it doesn't have to be a perfect grammar and perfect punctuation, or maybe it does, because, like, the point is, like, I seriously don't know what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I can't follow the thread of what you're talking about.
That's my major issue with it, too, is it's a communication issue.
Yeah.
You know, if someone can't understand you, there's no point to communicating.
So on the flip side, she sends me a text message back the other day where she throws in three vocabulary words from her book, one of which is expurgate. Ever heard that one?
Nope.
I had to look it up. It means to take a text or some bit of language and remove detestable bits, you know, so to expurgate the profanity from a written passage, I guess.
Mm.
What I was saying is I was at work and I had to be there till 5, and, well, it was Friday and I would be happier to not be there till 5. And she's like, I wish I could expurgate that for you. And, like, so, like, the way she's, like, using these words, she's trying hard to fit them in the sentence. And I said, okay, there's a certain level of, like, yes, I'm glad you're reaching for the stars with your vocabulary words, but you don't actually understand how they work in a sentence. And there's also context. To a certain level, context has to kind of be there. I mean, these words, sometimes the sentence has to work without the word. And so, you know, the context, you can get it. And there's also trite expressions, like words that, strictly speaking, yes, are words, but, you know, realistically speaking, nobody uses the friggin' words.
Yeah.
I forget. I wish I could remember the other a couple ones. The one word she put in there actually was, like, something like, okay, I'm glad you got that one, at least that one, but you spelled it wrong. So, but after a while, this finally, like, okay, like, I'm done with this conversation. We need to stop talking, because after a while, like, if I let her, she'll, like, dominate my night of, like, text, like, okay, enough already. I have stuff to do. So,
and that's the thing too, is I don't demand perfect grammar and perfect spelling, but you need to at least have an adequate level to be understood.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't.
Have you ever heard the phrase, language like that betrays a limited vocabulary?
No, I've not.
That is to say that you're using profanity because you don't have a more effective way, aside from using profanity, to bash
people. Like saying that swearing is a sign of a lack of creativity, which is frankly bullshit.
Well, the thing about that, though, is that to a certain extent, if you work with, you know, offenders like I do, you notice that their immediate response to, like, any kind of adversity is to just become obscenely profane.
Fuck you!
Fuck the fucking fuckers, and fuck you too, and fuck, and shit. And it's like a 12-year-old who, like, you know, is outside of the house, and, you know, the parents can't hear them, they can just swear, you know? You know, it's like that. And so that's the
or
kind
nowadays,
of
guy. Where they're in their house, and they're on Battlefield or Call of Duty or whatever.
Fucking noob. Fucking noob.
Yeah, all you new faggots. And I'm going to fuck your mom.
I do that on purpose because that's the quality of the microphone.
Got to be careful, though, because Skype auto-adjusted you. You're quieter.
Oh. Damn it.
So, yeah, I think that's about all we have here.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to Over the Fence. I'm David, and with me are Patrick.
Stay classy, Internet.
And Jonathan.
Watch John Carter. You'll love it.
Okay. Good night. Hurrah!
Hello.
Hurrah.
Okay.
In fact.
In many deeds.
Gaga ooh la la, want your bad romance.
Oh god, please stop.
I don't care who introduces, but I'm not gonna do it.
Alright. Any volunteers? If not,
I'll do it.
So
David. What? Oh right.
Time to take us out.
Yes.
That was a solid podcast. I'm happy with that.